影分身の術。
Hello and welcome to Talk No Jutsu, your go-to anime discussion podcast. I'm Admiral Beifong, and here's my co-host, Lao Guy.
What's going on, everyone? It's your boy, Lao Guy. Today's discussion covers something a little bit different from our norm. We want to talk about how animation saved the Star Wars franchise a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Admiral Beifong, why don't you kick us off with the beginning of this discussion?
Sure. So one of the first animated Star Wars series that I was able to see is the 2003 Clone Wars. Did you ever get to take a look at that one? I know a lot of people did.
Yeah, so this one is actually by Genndy Tartakovsky. I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Yep, yes.
However, so something important about this guy is he was the lead animator or like creator for Samurai Jack. And so a lot of his
animation... Oh, I didn't know
animation,
that.
Yeah, that's cool. It's crazy, right? So a lot of his animation style can be traced back to Samurai Jack. And, you know, there's a lot more silence. It's not very dialogue heavy. It's more action heavy in that sense.
Exactly. And I think some people had issues with that and other people loved it. It really depends on the type of audience. I know when I saw it, I was a little younger. So I just appreciated all the action that was thrown in there. But some older audience members saw it as a hit or miss.
Yeah, I think one thing that's important about it is it's not like it came out in the form of a movie or even in the form of a 30-minute episode. It was really released as like 5-minute shorts, and it was released like once a week that would happen like between commercials of a show. So really, it was more of a hype machine for Revenge of the Sith, which was coming out in early 2004, if I'm not mistaken. And this show started around 2003, if you can remember.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about the 2003 Clone Wars series was that it showed us a very crucial part of Anakin's development when he is essentially given... the title of Jedi Knight. I don't know if you remember seeing that scene.
Oh, yeah.
where he's
knighted and they cut the braid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yoda's knighting him. Because it was always a part of the Jedi ceremony that no one really knew about, right? It was how does someone go from being a Jedi Padawan to a Jedi Knight? And it was really cool seeing, you know, Yoda take out the lightsaber, bringing it really close to Anakin's neck, almost kind of a wow factor, like, oh my god, he might cut his head off. And then you see, you know, the end of his ponytail just sitting on the ground.
And I think it's interesting, too, because the actual scene does a really good job of building off of Anakin's character from episode 2 to 3. And it really tries to go out of its way to build a camaraderie between Anakin and Obi-Wan, which in episode 2, I felt like that was kind of weak, in my opinion. But in episode 3, you can really tell these guys have been through a war together. They're brothers at this point more than they are master and apprentice. Whereas in episode 2, Obi-Wan's kind of like a doting parent, and he's not really fit for the role either. He's kind of, you know, annoying.
This series actually introduced a new Jedi technique that was done by Mace Windu to General Grievous, and you know exactly what I'm talking about here, or no?
The Force Crush. I love that.
Yes, the Force Crush. And that is why General Grievous has his cough in the third episode when we're watching episode 3.
And there's also another great Mace Windu scene where it's like a very silent fight, but he takes on like 100 battle soldiers by himself entirely.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then, you know, he has like that little kid who watches on. And so it's like that kid is like awe inspired. It's like such a great idea, in my opinion. It's really such a show don't tell.
Yeah. It's a show don't tell. And it adds to the epicness of Mace Windu's character, which we didn't get to appreciate as much in the movies. And I like that the 2003 Clone Wars, you know, added that in.
There's also a scene where Kit Fisto gets a scene to shine. And Kit Fisto, if you don't remember, he gets killed by the Emperor in episode 3. So you don't really get...
It was one of the most epic fails of all Star Wars battles.
in this animated series, he gets this really cool moment where he's like fighting underwater, and the blade of the lightsaber is glowing like fire.
Because the water around it is evaporating, so it's just blowing off.
I think it was a great show, and I think it was definitely it delivered on the hype, because when I was watching it, I was ready to watch Revenge of the Sith in theaters. I think one big flaw is that the clones are kind of just cookie cutter, like red clone, blue clone, whereas like future series, which we'll get into in a little bit, really do focus a lot more on the clones themselves, the clone part of the Clone Wars, whereas this one just sees clones as sort of like super troopers, you know,
just pawns. And at the end, the nice thing about this was that it was completely different from anything that was released from Star Wars at the time and in the history of Star Wars. There hasn't been anything that was like this, you know, these 5-minute clips essentially of small stories in Star Wars.
Yeah. I almost do think that the way that's released now, I think you can get them on like DVD or Blu-ray and it's like a continuous like 1 or 2 hour movie. But mm-hmm. I feel like that doesn't do it justice because then the pacing gets thrown off as well. So that's something that they didn't really think about in terms of like people who watch this later. They're just going to be like, this is just action, action, action. The pacing is kind of thrown off, you know?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, for everyone listening, this is not canon anymore.
Yeah, so 2003... we'll get into canon and not canon with the Disney acquisition later on, but I think right now there's very few parts of it that contradict a lot of like what's going on in the 2008 Clone Wars. So you can kind of pick and choose in your own head like what would you like to keep canon. And I think a lot of the Palpatine kidnapping scenes, they don't really conflict with 2008 Clone Wars, and even in season 7 they kind of allude to it as well.
I think the only non-canon character was I forget if his name was like Durg or Dirge. He was the bounty hunter that I was talking about. They don't reintroduce him in the Clone Wars series that they work on afterwards. Yeah. So he was a 2003 Clone Wars only character.
Yeah. So I think it's you have to realize like what Star Wars was at that point, right? Like everything had been building up to Revenge of the Sith. You've got to realize as early as the 1980s where we're talking about Empire Strikes Back, where we realize that Luke's father was a Jedi who became a Sith Lord, right? And episodes 1 and 2 were kind of duds, and they didn't really build up Anakin's character. But episode 3 was the movie that everybody was waiting for. They wanted to find out, how does this young man, Anakin Skywalker, become the most iconic villain of all time? And episode 3 had to deliver on that, and I think this was great.
Yeah, this adds to the prequel trilogy for sure.
Exactly.
I mean, it adds it so much value. At all. Yeah, not at all. However, only adds.
I will argue that later animated additions to the Star Wars series definitely make it a little bit better. So I want to transition over into 2008. So if you'll put yourself in the mind of yourself back in 2008, it's basically been about 4 or 5 years since the last Star Wars movie was released. Oh my God, that was so long ago.
Yeah. yeah.
We were young. But yeah. My point is, you got to realize in terms of the Star Wars verse, like this was a dry spell. Right. And George Lucas comes out and says, hey, guys, we're coming out with a theatrical release of a new show called Star Wars, The Clone Wars. And this is going to be using brand new 3D animation. And I don't know about you. Most people weren't really hyped for it. If you remember it.
Because... Yeah, no, people weren't. But if you look at it, too, I mean, a lot of people right now can actually go on Disney Plus to take a look at the season 1 of Clone Wars. And you can actually you can tell why it was.
I don't even want to talk about the show. I want to talk about the theatrical released movie because it's something important to distinguish. Oh, you're talking about the
movie.
So I think it's important to distinguish because a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that I ended up learning later in life was that essentially George Lucas pushed for a theatrical release, whereas Dave Filoni and crew were really working on just the show, right? This was going to be sort of the introductory 4 episodes of the show. And they were like, all right, well, suddenly we have a movie, but we don't have a movie budget and we don't have a movie timeline. So they crammed 4 episodes of the Clone Wars show into a movie format. And you can kind of tell when you watch it, too. There's like the pacing is all over the place. There's a rise and there's a conclusion. There's a fall and there's a rise, conclusion, fall. And it's sort of like this was the
Jabba the Hutt one, right? I think this was
Jabba the Hutt's kid. Yeah.
Yeah. So this Stinky. Was the Stinky. Oh my God, such a horrible name.
Look at the animation, it's super janky, especially compared to later Clone Wars episodes as well.
And the worst part is this was competing with other 3D animated films at the time. Like this is right around the time that WALL-E came out. So it's
there was no chance. Yeah.
There's no chance that just from quality alone that they were going to be able to compete.
And I don't know about you. I remember because in 2008, I was still old enough to understand when I was being sold something that, you know, wasn't really a great quality. So when I watched it, I was like, Ahsoka is clearly there to be a stand-in for teenage audiences, like the teenage, like spunky girl. And like, I'm like, who is this chick? I thought she was annoying. I was like, who is this chick? She clearly was not in the original series. Like, she's just there to like, you know, give Anakin a fake backstory and like fake maturity.
No, I didn't feel like that. My biggest issue with the movie was that it was just bad. Like the story was bad. The villains weren't that entertaining.
I think you're gonna have to rewatch that movie because Ahsoka's really annoying. I think you're like retroactively thinking she's a cooler character because of what you know about her now. And I'll tell you right now, Ahsoka
True. I am a big Ahsoka fan. I think right next to Obi-Wan.
Totally. So, same here.
Yeah, currently right now Obi-Wan Kenobi and Ahsoka Tano are two of the best characters in the Star Wars franchise to me. So you're right. I probably have a jaded thought process about Ahsoka.
It's actually the opposite of jaded. You have like an improved thought process of Ahsoka because it's actually developed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah. So I kind of want to bring attention to that, because I, as someone who hated Ahsoka then, I love Ahsoka now. And I think there's part of that is because the 2012 Clone Wars series, or sorry, the series Clone Wars that began around the 2008 point, it went all the way until about 2012, right around the time Disney acquired it. And because of its anthology style, it was able to not just focus on Ahsoka, but Ahsoka was involved in different stories, and it slowly had a chance to develop her character. I think one of the biggest issues is that it never released in chronological order. There's like a watch order that you have to watch if you want to see these episodes in chronological order.
You're talking about the like Ahsoka episodes in Clone Wars?
So just any of the episodes in Clone Wars. They didn't ever release chronologically. There's guides but on StarWars.com.
But I like that. I like that a lot better, because you're able to connect with different characters at different times. And the reason it works so well that way is because you're not just concentrating on the Jedi characters. Each clone has their own unique personality and characters, which they're able to sprinkle in between the bounty hunters, the Sith fights, the Jedi, and that's why it works so well. Although, yeah, I can see if you wanted to...
So the anthology style works, and I totally agree with you in that sense, yeah. But the anthologies themselves were not released in chronological order. So there's like two or three episodes where there's like a break-in for the Senate, and then the consequences happen like four seasons later. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
so like,
yeah.
And supposedly in the timeline, it takes place immediately afterwards. So why didn't it air back-to-back? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
I think they're in the first season, there's an episode where they introduce Fives, and then like the next episode later, Fives wasn't introduced to the gang yet, so yeah, they do things like that. I kind of find funny.
I think a lot of it was like budgetary reasons. So one thing that's important that I think I told you about this very recently is that mm-hmm. this was not primarily funded through Cartoon Network. Cartoon Network didn't have the budget for this level of animation. A lot of this was funded through George Lucas's personal fortune, because he felt like his prequel trilogy received too much flack, and he really wanted to like flesh out this world that he had created. You know, and
which thank God he did. But
oh my God, yeah.
I really wish he spent half as much time working on the prequel trilogy to introduce some of these themes, because
oh, totally.
And people can say, you know, that it's really hard to introduce this stuff in movies. I just think George Lucas realized that, oh, there's aspects of this character that I didn't get to explore or flesh out, and this is and now I want to do justice right. to these characters.
And not just that, he has a guy like Dave Filoni who was kind of like his protege, and then Dave Filoni
literally
kind of
he was his Padawan. Like
exactly,
Filoni
Filoni
was the Anakin Skywalker to George Lucas's Obi-Wan Kenobi, and there's no better way to say it.
And if you look at like sort of the release schedule too, this show, I remember watching it on like Friday nights, like back to back with like Clone Wars, Ben 10, and like Generator Rex. So if you think about it, like that was kind of like the Friday night like equivalent of a Toonami block back when Toonami was kind of done, and it
yeah,
was like
Toonami
the closest thing
canceled.
To like anime. And it, like it took itself very seriously too. Like I remember my little brother and I would watch this, and there were scenes of like them at like what was supposed to be a strip club, but with obviously no nudity.
Right? Obviously, they had scenes of characters that were addicted to drugs. They had scenes of characters that underwent slavery. They had scenes of, I mean, murder, literally.
There's a scene where Ahsoka Tano, one of the main characters, decapitates like six people in one swift movement, right? Like,
yeah.
This
and there's another scene there's another scene with like Ahsoka Tano presented as like a slave, you know, to a bunch of bounty hunters.
So I think the anthology side of this really did a good job fleshing out not only the Ahsoka character and also the world of Star Wars, but also the clones. So one thing that we always talk about is how the prequels never really focused on the clone part of the Clone Wars. And you got to remember, like in 1977, when A New Hope, I guess like the original Star Wars came
yes.
out, there's only one line about the Clone Wars where Luke Skywalker says, "My father fought in the Clone War." What is it like? You're thinking to yourself, imagine if you were watching Star Wars from the 70s, you're like, man, what was the Clone War all about? And then the only answer you get is from the prequel trilogy. It's not very satisfying. And this really
yeah,
fleshes out the
yeah.
Clone War.
I don't think people questioned it like that either. Like, oh, I wonder what the Clone Wars are. It was more like, oh, it was probably a civil war fought in the past. But
yeah,
you're
but
right.
The
prequel
trilogy
did not do
seed.
Justice. Yes, you're right. It was just like a little drop from Ben Kenobi. But the prequel trilogies, you're right, did not do justice. I mean, they just essentially CGI copied everyone and didn't really flesh out any personality. We only knew about Commander Cody, and that was because he picks up his lightsaber, Obi-Wan's lightsaber, and hands it to him. Like
right.
That was it.
I mean, in the show, what you get Captain Rex and Commander Cody really developing as characters, seeing how like Cody's kind of more
and
of
the 501st
kind of guy. The 501st Legion, yep.
Yep, the 501st, which I think in a video game, they
Battlefront 2.
In Battlefront 2, they do touch upon the 501st a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, how like, Rex felt at that time during Order 66. It's really cool, but that was it.
So
that was
Rex didn't exist then, but yeah, I think it's, like,
implied. It wasn't Rex. It was maybe another character.
It was like the captain of the 501st Legion.
Yeah, captain of the 501st Legion.
Yeah, which is now Rex. With the new canon. Yep. One thing that was interesting is that in the before the Clone Wars series had come out, the big question is like, all right, now that we're developing these clones, how do we convince them that Order 66 is still viable? Because there was no way we could imagine Rex turning on Ahsoka and Gang and Anakin, especially after being
we never got to see in the prequel trilogies how Order 66 played out from the clones' point of view. We only saw it from the Jedi's point of view.
We can talk about that in a later episode because that's a lot of post-Disney stuff, but I think it was interesting because
this series really
introduced us to the idea of the inhibitor chips that forces clones to just completely obey Order 66 rather than just these guys choosing to murder, which is what Battlefront 2 was kind of implying. They were like, oh, we couldn't look her in the eyes because we knew what was to come, which I think is it's kind of a cop out in my opinion because it just sort of overwrites development. But at the same time, yeah, I understand why it was necessary.
I think they were just trying to play with that idea. Clearly, it didn't take off, and they didn't end up sticking with it. Thank God.
Right.
The idea of the inhibitor chips and something cooler: some clones finding out about the inhibitor chips, and then the whole. The five situation where that was really cool because it fleshed out the clones characters even more than we had than I thought was even possible because there were scenes in Clone Wars that I felt were gonna essentially just break into Episode 3. At times I got really scared because I thought they were playing it too close to home. Some scenes like Fives finding out about the inhibitor chips or Anakin turning to the dark side temporarily when he meets the light and the Mortis arc. So I got a little scared there.
Yeah, I think they love the Filoni and gang. They love Star Wars, and the last thing they want to do is corrupt what already exists, which I think is something that is like really prominent throughout their writing process. They only choose to build rather than destroy or retroactively like deconstruct. One thing I will say is Anakin's characterization. I love him in the Clone Wars. And then if you watch it, like Episode 2, Clone Wars, and then Episode 3, he's like a different character entirely, right? The Anakin in the Clone Wars is who I imagine Anakin would be when I watched the original trilogy.
Who I wished Anakin was in the original trilogy. But that creates a
disconnect.
Yeah, it does. But it's almost like Anakin from the Clone Wars matured in the series I'm talking about, not the movie, from where he was in the movie, which makes sense, right? He went from a Jedi Padawan to a Jedi Knight and took on an apprentice, became a general, and had a couple years of war experience. That made sense.
Yeah.
But then you go to Episode 3, the movie, and he's just a whiny baby again.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So that little disconnect, I think Filoni did a great job of creating the Anakin Skywalker we all kind of wanted to see. Like, he has like that cockiness. There's
the scenes, Anakin, Anakin we don't deserve, but the Anakin we need.
There are scenes that are hinted throughout the entire Clone Wars show where you can just kind of subtly hear the Darth Vader theme playing when Anakin does something that most Jedi wouldn't do, but he's doing because the ends justify the means.
Oh, yeah, it's like a slightly higher pitch, very subtle theme. I know exactly what you're talking about. And sometimes they would even like slightly change the color of his eyes to slightly more hazel.
Yeah,
just these tiny things that Filoni threw in there. Dave Filoni, by the way, is the mastermind. He is one of the reasons Star Wars is where it is today. And I mean, I'm excited to talk about the future of Star Wars too. But
that's definitely another episode we could talk about. But just really focusing on like the animation of the Clone Wars too. Another subtle part of it was you can kind of see how war is the reason Anakin Skywalker becomes Darth Vader, rather than this whole Padme BS that was kind of concocted in Episode 3.
It's nice to have that Padme side to it too, because it shows that it's not just the big problems, it's also the small problems that got to him. I think more than Padme, Ahsoka's whole betrayal with the Jedi was a bigger reason for him to turn to the dark side. And I know they touch upon that closer to the end. What was it, 2014? Was that season six?
I guess we could talk about the production schedule. So this show went on from the 2008 movie all the way to 2012. And in 2012, if you guys remember, that's when Disney acquired Star Wars. And they essentially waived off anything that was not the movies as non-canon. They call them legends now.
Yep.
The only thing that was an exception to this was the Clone Wars show, because George Lucas begged and pleaded and threw like millions of his own money into this show. So they're like, fine, we'll make it canon, but we're going to end it. And so 2012, I think end of season five is where Ahsoka walks away from the Jedi Order. And that was kind of their idea of a season finale or a series finale. And you got to remember
that was season six, right?
So that was season five. And then season
six. You're right. Yeah.
And then in 2014, they cut a deal with Netflix to distribute just what they call the quote unquote lost episode. So that's season six. And that covers a lot more like the Yoda stuff and like him discovering like Dagobah, that kind of stuff. Yes. I think that was very interesting. And I think it was good that they called them the lost episodes rather than a brand new season. It's funny to look back on this now because it seems so seamless. But you got to realize like season five's finale was Ahsoka walking away. For all intents and purposes, that was the finale of the show at that time.
So you know what's funny? It's cool because you've seen this in the order it was almost released to the public.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. But the way I saw this was very different. I binged all of Star Wars Clone Wars after, 2016.
So you're mad.
yeah, I know. It was a crazy journey, and getting through season one was really hard because the animation quality was not there.
Well, not just that. So I think one thing that a lot of the mature stuff that we talk about is not consistent throughout Clone Wars. There are entire anthology arcs that focus on like Jar Jar Binks's antics or R2-D2's antics, and they're too childish in my opinion. So they're like, so this is one of those things where there are kiddie aspects to Clone Wars, but you can skip them if you'd like to. Right?
Exactly, and that's why I love that it's an anthology series, because you can skip, and if you go to the next episode, it doesn't affect the entire story that you were already watching. It's almost like a SpongeBob-esque or a Friends-esque show where you can jump in on any episode and jump
and
out.
You have
on
a rough
episode.
Idea, yeah.
Exactly, and you still know what's going on. And if you've seen the movies, then you could be even more liberal and just jump between seasons. Watch one episode in each season.
I've asked my brother to sort of jump between different arcs entirely because I told him, like, you don't have the patience to watch it, I know, so might as well just watch, like, stuff like the Umbara
Has he seen the movies?
Yeah, he's seen the movies with me, yeah, of course.
Oh, you said Maul stuff. So that's one thing I did want to talk about.
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot about Maul. How did we miss Maul? Yeah, let's talk about that.
So, you know what's funny? I have a couple friends, like, religious Star Wars fans. So some of them, went through Clone Wars and went through that journey just like you did. But a lot of others didn't. So learning that Maul was alive was something they learned a couple years ago when they saw the Han Solo movie. And it triggered some people.
Oh my god, that's the way they learned about it?
There's memes about this, man. There's memes where, like, people are making fun of non-religious Star Wars fans or Star Wars fans that didn't see Clone Wars and saying, oh, when you find out that Darth Maul was alive, and it's a picture of him in the Han Solo movie. But I know that this ticked a lot of people off. What do you think? Okay. How do you think Clone Wars handled that in the show?
You got to realize, when I saw Maul come back on screen, I was so hyped. I think people were worried that it would be bad because it just kind of seemed like a cheap, like, fan fiction kind of thing. Like, oh, by the way, Maul was alive the whole time. And I guess we're past the statute of limitation for spoilers. So Maul is alive.
Let's be careful. So anything that came out, so anything season 7 related, I wouldn't spoil. Basically,
yeah, I'll step off of anything season 7 related. I think season 6, until season 6 is fair game. If it's 2014.
It's 2014, 15, like that's more than enough time.
So I bring it up specifically because at the time, you have to remember Darth Maul in episode 1 was barely a character. He was just sort of a walking like death machine. And he had a cool design. And in another episode, if we want to rewrite our idea of an ideal prequel trilogy, I think he should have been like the main baddie, right, throughout the whole time.
I think it would have been cool to see him as a secondary villain.
Right. In the way, like, Darth Vader is, like, not the real villain, but he's the main focus, right?
Exactly.
Of the original. But regardless, we didn't get that. And I think Filoni saw this wasted opportunity. And Sam Witwer, the voice actor for Maul, really added this intellectual side to Maul. Whereas before, we saw him as sort of this brawler. He kills Qui-Gon. He doesn't really say much.
He seemed like just a chess piece for Sidious. And that's all he was in episode one. He just seemed like muscle that could dance with the dexterity of a god. Like, that's all he seemed like. But in Clone Wars, they expand on his strategical or his emotions. I mean, in episode one, his beef with Kenobi
is his whole arc.
Yes, yes. His beef with Kenobi is essentially his arc through Clone Wars.
Right, and even into Rebels, too, you know, if you want to talk about Rebels in a later episode.
Yeah.
But, like, his obsession with Obi-Wan Kenobi and his defeat at the hands of Obi-Wan Kenobi, along with the introduction of his brother and his culture, like the Night Sisters and that Dathomir. Mm-hmm. The invention of Dathomir alone is such a crucial part of Star Wars canon now. Like, that was part of the dark side.
And I love that they kept it in there even after the acquisition, because it's the Night Sisters utilize a very faint style of dark side magic. They're essentially, and it's really cool that they kept that in there. And it's interesting that, you know, Sidious still knows that Maul is out there, that his ex-apprentice is out there. So getting to see the dynamic between the two villains, between the secondary villain and the main heroes, it adds a lot of quality content there. And Darth Maul actually might be my favorite villain in all of Star Wars, because they flesh him out.
Because of this Clone Wars, though. Because
of Clone Wars, because of Rebels, because, literally because of the animated shows that he's in, and comics, which I would like to touch upon later as well.
Before we jump into that, I just want to rant a little bit about Maul as well.
He's my favorite.
So one more thing I want to rant about Maul is about his relationship with Darth Sidious, right? Because for a long time, he calls his brother Savage his apprentice, not his brother, right?
Yes.
And he doesn't refer to him as a loving family member, because he doesn't know that. Right, he's never known that, because Sidious took him in at such a young age and corrupted him. And I think it's such a subtle piece of character work. And then there's only the one scene where he truly shows empathy and love for his brother is when Sidious kills him, and he's
during
my
his
brother.
Death. Yeah,
exactly.
That was the only time I think he shows sadness actually throughout his character.
And you can understand, because that breaks him past the breaking point. Like, that's why he becomes who he is in Rebels as well. But there's also Sidious, because he's aware of this. But the second that Maul actually becomes a threat and takes over Mandalore and all these other things, Sidious is like, this has gone too far, I'm stepping in. And Maul is such a coward too. He like cries at Sidious's feet. He's like, oh master, I've been waiting for you. And Sidious is like, I don't need you anymore. I already have someone cooking. And like, you know, obviously we all know it's Vader, right? He has Anakin cooking. Right?
Oh yeah. Exactly.
But the scene, that fight with Maul and Savage versus Palpatine is just so brilliantly executed, so brilliantly choreographed.
It also showed me that Sidious was more than just, you know, a strategical mastermind that had a really strong force affinity, that this guy could actually fight like two Siths.
I mean, he fights Yoda too, right? Like,
But his fight with Yoda, I mean, Yoda's old. Yoda's not in his prime, clearly. Yeah. But you have Darth Maul, who's right around his prime, right? Yeah. Fighting Darth Sidious with his brother. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
And not just that one scene alone, there's three red lightsabers flying around.
Four,
two of them are double-bladed. So right, four if
you
want to include like the dark, and then there's a dark saber flying around there too, right? So
yeah, there is.
Despite all of the different colors, there's like only two or three real colors that we work with, but we know exactly whose blade is whose, and the way it's choreographed and shot is just impeccable. And I'm ranting. I'm going on a rave about.
No,
this
I love it.
I think it's so important.
And in addition to this, if any of you guys watch that fight again, it's only something because, you know, Star Wars fans love talking about Star Wars fights. That fight scene is something that can only exist in an animated format. If you try to make that scene a live action scene, it won't work, because people's bodies don't move like that in reality, no matter how much CGI you use.
That fluidity, right? Yeah.
Exactly. The way
or
that
especially...
Darth
No, especially Ian McDiarmid, you couldn't get him to move the way Sidious does in this show, you know?
Oh, not at all. I mean, even if you use a stunt double, you just can't get a human to move the way that Sidious moves during that fight scene. And I recommend, if you guys haven't seen this, to just YouTube Darth Maul versus Sidious and it'll pop up. And that's the beauty of animation. And that's the beauty that animation brings to Star Wars, right?
Oh,
our
totally.
Thirst for lightsaber battles was quenched via, you know, the animation that, like, you know, brought it back. And not just
that,
us.
There's a lot of experimental stuff that Clone Wars introduces, like the Mortis arc, which is very trippy visually speaking and can only have been done animated wise. It's you could have tried.
And even for the story it was a bit shocking.
It was pretty out there.
Yep.
There was a lot of mysticism and a lot of symbolism and stuff that probably like most live action fans were not ready for. I definitely wasn't ready for it as a kid, but rewatching it later I understand its importance now
more. I still wasn't ready for it as an adult when I was watching it. I was like, whoa. I was like these guys just took it to the next level, understanding of the Force and everything.
And I think animation as a medium really allowed Clone Wars to sort of bring back Star Wars into a positive light. You got to remember that, like, you know, the last thing that we knew about Star Wars was Revenge of the Sith, which kind of was like mid, but still like the best prequel, but kind of mid by comparison. And then the 2008 movie, which left a really bad taste in people's mouths. And this is kind of the biggest redemption arc that I've seen. Like, you know, top 10 anime redemption arcs right now.
Dave Filoni
brought back Ahsoka from this hated character to a great character. Maul from this bland, generic villain to this intellectual, this calculating, this cowardly, this loving yet also broken character. Obi-Wan Kenobi, he just kind of amplifies the sass, you know. Skywalker's more heroic. So really a lot of the things that had potential in the prequels, Clone Wars had the potential to sort of bring it back full circle or even make it better than it was. And I think Clone Wars really saved Star Wars for a long time. And then the Disney acquisition happens in 2012, which kind of changes the game Star Wars.
Yeah, was. And I think what we're going to do is have the Disney acquisition and everything after the Disney acquisition discussed in a separate episode.
That's perfectly okay with me. I think that's a fair way to continue this discussion going forward. If you want to look back, the 2003 Clone Wars shorts were amazing, but they weren't very character heavy. They were more so cool, interesting anecdotes
but,
that happened.
But they were, but they were, they gave the possibility for animated Star Wars to work. They proved that Star Wars can work in this medium.
Oh, 100%. And then the fact that this show, the Clone Wars show, existed, and the fact that fans loved it so much that they wanted another season after season 5. They wanted another season after season 6. Even now, there are still unfinished episodes. You can find them on YouTube of the Clone Wars that show Anakin dealing with the aftermath of Ahsoka leaving. There's an episode where Anakin and Obi-Wan are on Utapau, the place where Obi-Wan eventually kills Grievous, and they're searching for a big kyber crystal, which, as we all know, ends up being part of the Death Star, right? That's the laser. Part of the Death Star laser, or at least like it's implied to be, right? And Anakin has a scene with Obi-Wan where he talks about how like he doesn't want to talk about Ahsoka leaving because it shows that he failed as a master, and he's kind of reverting back to that immature person. And if we had that one or two episodes, I feel like it would kind of bridge the gap between the Clone Wars and episode
3. I would love for them to release those sometime in the future, but
yeah, you can watch them on YouTube. I think they were on starwars.com for a long time.
I think I've seen them. They're just like some of the scenes are like rough sketches, right?
They're very rough sketches. They don't have any facial animations or even background animations,
but they have all the voice actors recorded.
Are doing their job. So if you can get past the janky animation, I think it's so worth looking at. There's also young Boba Fett has a few arcs, and he kind of gets like a redemption arc, and you kind of see how he gets the dent on his helmet, which I guess like people care about, but it's also really cool to see young Boba Fett deal with the morality of, hey, like these, like the Jedi killed my father, yet these clones all look like my father. There's a few episodes where he has to deal with that, the consequences of that. I just think Clone Wars is such a great addition to the Star Wars universe, and it's sad that we won't see anything like that for a long time.
That's where I don't agree with you. I think, is where we'll discuss the future, where the future of Star Wars is headed. But I think Clone Wars has expanded the Star Wars universe like the Big Bang, right? It's really blown it up, and it's done it in such a good way that the future of Star Wars content can utilize the thousands and thousands of dragon eggs that Clone Wars has laid out for us. So I think in the next 5 years, you're going to see some of the best Star Wars shows we've ever seen in the history of Star Wars.
And I think that's the perfect way to cap off this episode, too. I think that's a great optimistic note to end on. I'm glad we were able to talk about the animation history.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Talk No Jutsu. I'm your co-host, Admiral Beifong.
And I'm your co-host, Lao Guy. And we'll catch you guys on the next episode of Talk No Jutsu.
Stay tuned, fam.